First, could you give me your name and address?
My name is Ellis D. Howard, Route 2, Box 43, Greenberg.
And now, could you tell about how the registering and voting first started among Negroes in St. Helena Parish?
Well, registering and voting first started in St. Helena Parish based on unfair treatments and on the part of police forces and other white citizens, and unfair treatments on the part of the agriculture programs and different projects. We felt that if we could participate in the government by voting, we would be able to get better treatment, and we'd be able to get more respect from other persons who are participating in government. And then we launched out to get qualified for voting. So we went down and registered. And
what year was that?
That was in 1954. 51 at first, when we registered first in 51. So we never experienced any problem in registering first in 51. Went down and registered, and then we went back in 56 to start to vote. And we experienced in the latter part of 54, went back to vote, and we experienced problems, you know, going to vote. And we filed complaints in with the Department of Justice, and Phil Marshes came down and settled this problem. So then we were able to go down and vote without any interference. In 1956, we went down and we voted without any problems. But even at that, for an example, at our voting precinct, there were two voting machines placed in the precinct, which it was illegal according to the law, because the law hold that any voting precinct that has increased the number of votes to registered voters to exceed 600, two voting machines should be provided. But we did not have that many. It was 250 Negro voters, and they exceed the white. It was only about 107 to white. So we didn't have as many as 500, 600. And of course, this was to practice discrimination against the Negro and the white in the voting precinct. So we filed complaints in with the Department of Justice relative to unfair treatments in the voting precinct. And we went in before the Civil Rights Commissioners and testified against these problems. And after 1961, then the books closed against those that were registered at that time, and the registration period expired. So we had to go back in 51 and register again. We came back, it was 1960 rather, the books closed. We had 4 years period. Operating on a periodic registration and system. And in 1961, we had to go back and register again. So we went back in 1961 to start registering. And there we met up with a lot of strategy of having to read and interpret the Constitution of the State of Louisiana or of the United States, which we did not have to go through with in the first place. This, we were faced with many problems and difficulties of satisfying the registrar with our interpretation. So then we had to file complaints according to, you know, these problems. Based against these problems, we had to file complaints. And we were able to get consideration from the Department of Justice relative to problems that we were experiencing from having to read and interpret certain clauses of the Constitution of the State and of the United States. And in the process of the struggle of trying to get registered to vote, we felt that we needed assistance from other groups to join us and to help us to carry on. So Mr. Ronnie Moore, who is the field secretary of co-organization, came in. And he and I worked together for about several weeks in trying to encourage Negroes to register and trying to help them to qualify under the system of qualification recommended by the state legislature.
And that was in 1962?
In 1962, that's right. And we had very little success in getting cooperation that we shouldn't ought to have in that period. We got quite a few, and quite a few registered, and very few even went down to register in that movement. During the time, it was a work time, and farming time, and we didn't get the cooperation that we should have gotten either. We set another registration campaign period, and I asked Mr. Moore to see if he could get the official staff of the core organization to send an integrated committee down to work with our program. I felt that there were those who would rather hear a white citizen say come and would be obedient and submitted to that kind of appeal rather than they would a Negro, because we had such experience in the past. And then we wanted Negro, because there are those that the Negro would hear. And however, if they would hear a stranger rather than to hear a person that they have been around every day.
Mm-hmm.
And we felt that this would change the progress in the program. And this was done. So we were fortunate enough to get many Negroes down to the registrar's office, even though we didn't get many in. And we would be able to get as many as 125 or 130 a day. But we were unfortunate to get as many as we could. We had down to the office. We only could get about 8 in some days 3, some days 4. The legislation had added to the qualification clause giving the registrar, the applicant, 40 minutes to qualify under the required statuses. And the registrar would use that a certain strategy to hold that member over that time. He would try to hold an applicant in there long enough to take up the time for several applicants. And this belonged the time and used up all of the time where we couldn't get many Negroes in at the time. So we were able to get a summary of their experiences in the office, and through that we were able to get complaints, build our complaint upon their experience, and through the process we were able to get actions from the Department of Justice, wherein all of this strategy was declared unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were able to get recommendations made to the president and to the federal court for a decision would eventually render that declared the state laws even null and void, non-constitutional, which was against the 15th Amendment of the United States Constitution, which said that the rights for citizens to register to vote should not be denied on account of race, color, or previous servitude. And I think the Department of Justice put forth a very fine effort to protect the citizens and their rights when they declared that all of the strategies of the state based on their qualification clause was null and void and unconstitutional, and ordered them to cease to use these policies and to register Negro, and if not, they would have federal registrars sent here under the Civil Rights Bill, passed under the Civil Rights Clause, to register Negro. And we haven't been bothered with this kind of strategy, But we come up with the strategy after the registrar seen that he had to do it, or either he would be substituted, his position would be substituted with a federal registrar. Then he used the strategy to deprive the Negro applicant from registering within the party that which the state has, which the state approved. He almost practically chooses the party, and more specifically, this is dealing with the illiterate person who is not able to make his own choice. When it is left up to the registrar, he will either suggest that he accept a state right or a Republican party. Through this strategy, we have around 150 or 250 Negroes registered in a state right or a Republican party. So these registered voters did not realize that they were registering wrong until they came out to vote in the election Saturday, in the first primary election Saturday. When they came out to vote, their name was not found by the commissioners on the voting list. And then this situation become questionable. Then they begin to question us and ask us why we are not on the list. The commissioner directed them and advised them to go back to the registrar and consult with him, because he was responsible for placing the list, the names of all the registered voters on a list that he's going to turn over to the commissioner, so that they could make sure that these persons be checked if they come down to vote. And there was approximately 150 or better names left off, and these people went down to vote. That was an evidence that they did not know what they were doing when they made choice or got the assistance of the registrar to make that choice of what party to affiliate with. And when they went back to the registrar's office to inquire of him why their name was not on the list, then was the time, and only the time, that he informed them that for them to vote in these elections, which is the state and local election, they must affiliate with the Democratic Party, because the voters that affiliate with the Democratic Party will be able to vote in state and local elections. And then these people were convinced that they have need of going back and filing an application for a change in their party affiliation. And I'm quite sure this is going to be done. Perhaps we could have maneuvered the parish and found these persons and tried to talk with them about this. Perhaps nothing would have suffered better than they meeting up with this experience of going down to vote and would deprive of their rights and opportunities to vote. And this would encourage them then to do the next best thing, which was to have their party affiliation changed. And so far we are getting along very nicely, and I think the Department of Justice is doing a very good job in helping us to exercise our rights as American citizens. Mm-hmm. But they still need help. They still need to be informed about problems. As long as we keep it to ourselves, they will not be informed. But it's our duty to keep pressing on and to keep doing our best to work toward liberty and freedom and first-class citizenship. And any problem that we experience, it's our responsibility to make these problems known so that federal government would take action and do their part to help us to become first-class citizens and respected uh-huh. citizens in a world like this.
Uh-huh. Could you tell me now about how you got started on the school integration?
The way we got started on the school integration was we had all of our schools were those school buildings that were not donated by Negroes were built by Negroes. Most of our school sites were churches where Negro communities get together and they build churches. And when we and they had, these churches had a board of trustees, and a board of stewards. The school board of St. Helena Parish would make contact with these board of trustees and ask for permission to sign a teacher to that church to teach these children. Now, they did not pay the church for the building, but they were getting the building site free. They would assign teachers to these church communities at the consent of the trustees and pastors of the church. And this was to the expenses of the poor Negro community. Mm-hmm. They had to build a church, and then they had to make room for the school board to sign a teacher there to teach his child. And when it come time for a high school, then they know that they couldn't use churches sufficiently for a high school. And a Negro by the name of Norton Tops gave a portion of land to build a high school in the parish. And the school board then told this Negro group that if they would put up labor and put up money and help pay the carpenters, they would put up a certain amount of lumber and a certain grade of lumber, which would assist them in getting this school built. This was done. The Negro worked daily, and they toiled and labored daily, wherein the white had never worked on white school. When they get ready to build a white school, they would float a bond issue. And the Negroes' tax valuation would pay just as much on the bond issue as the white. So then, this was not so in the Negro community. He had to paddle his own canoe. He had to put up the money, he had to put up labor, he had to do everything it took that he could to help get his child an education. Mm-hmm. And so after this school was built, the school burned down, and then the Negroes got together and they put up money and they put up service and rebuilt the school back with the cooperation of the school board. And the Negro population increased to the extent that it wasn't enough room, it wasn't enough seating capacity for the children. So then we had approximately about 500 children were being taught under trees. And these children, life was exposed to rain and bad inclement weather, what have you. And with these problems developed in our community, we met in PTAs, we discussed this problem to a large extent, and then we decided we would do something about this. So a committee was sent to the school board, asking the school board to take action, to provide a house, a building, and pews and so forth for these children, and desks for these children, school facilities for the children. And the school board told the committee to tell us that they were not able, but if we could hire a carpenter and pay the carpenter, they would furnish some sap lumber to put up a building. And they had just built a brick building for the white community. But if we would pay the carpenter and furnish labor to assist the carpenter in constructing this building, they would put up the lumber to build the building. So we agreed to do this sort of thing, and we went to work and put up lumber. We went out and we gave labor, and we done everything we could. But we were still experiencing this problem, and we felt that something could be done about it. So we called in the leaders in the educational field and began to question them about this problem. They advised us that it is the school board's responsibility to build schools, and if our responsibility to see to it, that they do it. They recommended the NAACP activities and what progress it was making in various communities and in various parishes, and how we can profit by the progress if we would join hands with the NAACP organization and become a part of the NAACP activities, and we could work towards the end of getting better education for our children. And this could only be done by filing petition for integrating the school, and the school board would do the best they can to help make provision for the Negro children and the Negro community rather than to integrate schools, even though in the final analysis they would have to integrate schools. So then a petition was filed for integration, and the school board sent out and made a survey in the Negro community asking what they want. Well, they would not go around to the people who were responsible for filing the petition for integration. They went around to the old settlers that they had been harassing around for years, who had this Yasa spirit and never have never injected the no spirit to the thing that they know was wrong and unfair. So these men told them, all we want is facilities and schools. But every now and then they would have an opportunity to question the right man. And he would say, for my child to get equal facilities, and for my child to get equal rights, for my child to get the proper education and proper attention, he must be in the white school. And this is what I've said every time that they've asked me that. The only way that he's going to get justice, he's going to have to be in the white school. And that's my fight in the first place. That's the standard I've taken in the first place. And that would be my stand. When I be called into judgment, I'll still say, that's where he belongs. That is where the money is, isn't it? That is where the knowledge is. That is where the facilities is. That is where he belongs. He belongs where these things. When you're separating from these things, then you deprive him of his rights of having an equal education and the first class, that he might be able to qualify to be a first class citizen. And it marched on till this case was carried into the federal courts by virtue of petition filed against the school board for integration. The school board taken action to build better buildings and better schools, but it wouldn't suffice. They put up a brick building out there to house the children. They built more other buildings to house the children, but it wouldn't suffice. We still pressed our claims in court for integration. And the school board went to work to call for a special bondage, a parish-wide bondage to build a brick school then. And they felt that the Negro would fall for the brick school rather than to accept integration or to be integrated in the white school. But this wouldn't suffice. They could build a gold mansion out there. They could build it out of marble stone. This was not suffice, because the child must be in it where knowledge is. He must be in it where the proper facilities is. He must be in it where every opportunity is available for first-class education. And to build this marble stone just to look at the marble wouldn't suffice. And so the time come in 1964 when the school was finally integrated. I was fortunate enough to have one son to integrate in that group. And we had 16 applicants at that time. We had five that was accepted. The application was based on investigation of the school board, and they could reject it on certain grounds or accept it on certain grounds. And they had about 16 or 18 applicants applied through applications, and all of these were rejected on the ground of technical errors and what have you, and only five of these applications were accepted. Even though these five were accepted, the harassment took place by school board members and superintendent of the school board and white citizens of the community and police officers of the community, until two of these parents were forced to go down and withdraw the application, carry the child down and have the child withdraw the application. So then it only left us three. It was only three. And I believe that this is a representation of the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost, which would place a seal on integrated procedures to help pave the way and open up an avenue for all of the Negro children to follow into, where they can be able to get a first-class education. This was done. And in the next year, the teachers were advised to send out application to the students and to request that this application be back in within eight days. So the children were given the application and told that they could throw it away, or they could burn it up, or they could hide it, or whatever they wanted to do. But if they were them, they would not try to make provision to fill it out and go to the school. Some of the children burned up the application. Some of the children tore them up. Some of the children carried them home and hid them. But when we were aware of the fact that these children, these applications had been issued, then I began to call parents and question about it. And they began to question their children about it and found out that they were issued. Eight parents encouraged their children to file an application. Among those parents, one that had two or seven children. So we got nine applications filed in, and the school board having the privilege to determine whether the application was accepted or rejected. They rejected all nine of these applications. And after the rejection of the application, I filed a complaint in with the Department of Justice on the ground that these applications were rejected on the ground of technical errors. And I held that the decision of court held that no application would be rejected on the ground of technical errors. And if these were not technical errors, I wonder what they were. Because one application was rejected because both of the parents did not sign. The wife signed, the husband did not sign. Another one rejected because the husband did not sign, the wife did not sign, and the husband signed. The other one rejected because the school board held that this parent and child lived more nearer to the Negro school than they did the white school. And it was in a different district, and that they couldn't pass out of one district into another district to enter a child in the school. He would have to enter that child in the school in his district. And the decision of the court was based on no districts was accepted in this integration. But this is the action that the school board taken, the strategy that they used to reject these nine applications. So then the Justice Department taken action. They came down and they filed a suit against the school board, and they filed a complaint with the federal judge and asked for him to render a decision in behalf of the integration, the Negro integration, and asking him to add to that decision the first graders instead of the ninth and tenth grade, because the 11th and 12th grade had already been integrated. And this was supposed to have been based on in fact, they were not to, for total integration, it was based on gradual integration. So then there was the base on two grades a year. Two grades, the first and the 12th, 11th and 12th first year, the 9th and the 10th the next year. So instead of this being the 9th and 10th to be integrated this year, they were penalized by a recommendation asking the jurors to order that they put on the first grade. So then they had to discard all the old original applications that had been rejected, even the form of the application. Even the form of the application, and that were recommended by the Department of Justice, new forms, a pattern for a new form. And this form, the original form, give the school board the opportunity to determine which application is accepted and which application is rejected. But the new form recommended by the Department of Justice did not give the school board any opportunity to determine who is to be rejected, who is to be accepted. And then, two, it did not compel both parents to sign this last form. But in the original form, both parents were compelled to sign it, and it had to be brought down to the office, not sent, by one of the parents. This is to harass this parent, to prevent this parent from being willing to send a child down there. So these new applications had to be sent out for all Negro students that was of that grade level, based on the ninth, the first grade, ninth, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade. So after they had to do this thing over again, in order to get this information round to these parents, to inform them that they were permitted to send this child to the white school if they wished to do so, and it, because it was based on freedom of choice. And if they choose to send this child to the white school, file the application in accordance. And then we had 18 students instead of 9 that filed the application in to enter the white school. Two of those students, for some unknown reason, went down and had their applications canceled. But 16 of these students still held their applications there, and they went through the school period. And only one student out of the first students that entered the white school last year, only one of the three students graduated this year. And the other students, some lacking 1 point and some lacking 2. And my boy, of course, was the school closed and he lacking 1 point of finishing high school. I don't know whether it was a fault of his or a fault on the teaching faculties, or whether they deprived him of some of his the points of his work, or whether he failed. But I believe that it was, if anything, that they could do to prevent either one of these children from getting the sufficient points that they should get to graduate out of the white school. They're going to do that sort of thing. And so then we're now working on getting more students integrated in the white school next year. And this year we are informed that we have approximately 40 students. And these students, first we heard that we had 30, but right recently I'm informed that we have about 40. And these students will be integrating in several schools, white schools of the parish. One, I think, we had 6 students that were informed to enter in Pine Grove School. I haven't went down and checked on that, but we're supposed to have 6 to enter in Pine Grove School. And the other of the 40 would be entering into Woodland School and Greensburg High School. These parents, I'm quite sure, will be harassed quite a deal, but I'm trying to keep in close touch with the parents and encourage them to send their children, because the darkest hour is just before day. Any time that you receive harassments or difficulties or encounters problems as a result of sending your child to the white school, it do mean that child is just getting in a position to get an equal education, first-class education. He's just getting in a position to make himself a first-class citizen in the United States of America. He just get in a position to prepare himself to qualify for a first-class job, and to qualify for job opportunities, to qualify for any technical job that is available for any white citizen. It will be available for him. He's just getting qualified for job opportunities to seek him, and not him so much as trying to seek the job opportunities, because job opportunities always seek qualification rather than to seek the end qualification. But the person that's not qualified will always have to run the job opportunities down, and oftentimes he fails to find where he fits in because he's not qualified to fit in. And I'm trying to keep in touch with the parents, even though I have talked with some parents who are experiencing difficulties with the superintendent of the schools, but I'm trying to keep in touch with them to keep them in heart to send their children down there and to not have anything to fear. And I believe that by continuously working with the parent and helping them to encourage that child to study and learn and then not be afraid but go, we will be able to do an effective job in the integrating school situation, and it is based on results of registering and voting, because if we were we would be powerless if we don't register, and of course we couldn't vote, and this has a great bearing on the political officials who are participating on the in the political affairs. This has a great bearing on electing school board members and what have you, and police gerard, who has to do with the governing the parish, and once we're qualified to vote, and we're experiencing these problems, we can be able to move and put in, and be able to tear down and build up. And through the process, we will be able to get people in the position that will take under consideration our problem and help us to help ourselves to develop a better form of government.
Okay, the last question I have is how the NAACP got started in this parish.
Well, the NAACP got started in the parish through these problems that we were experiencing. These representatives that come in the parish to assist us in getting information on how to solve these problems, go about to solve these problems, recommended the NAACP organization and suggested that we organize a chapter and get connected with the National Association. And we will be informed directly from the National Association what action to take, and we will be defended in our efforts for school integration by or through the national office. And I think it was in 1955 when a small group of Negroes gathered together and discussed this matter. And each made himself a commitment to go out into the community to invite other Negroes to come to a special meeting that was set up whereby we would be able to get enough Negroes together, which was it necessitated about 50 members to purchase a charter. And we wanted to get maybe 500. So we worked to the end of getting as many members, many persons that we possibly could to attend this meeting and encourage them to become members of the NAACP. And we did so. I think we got approximately around 60 or 70 persons to attend the meeting, and they were willing to take out a membership. In that, we were able to get the amount, the approximate amount, which was 50, to purchase a charter. And this group organized that day, and we wrote in to the national office for a charter.
This was in about what year?
It's in about 1955. And we wrote in for charter, and we were chartered under the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, and we began to receive pamphlets of instruction. We began to receive copies of the bylaws and letters of instruction and recommendations, suggestions on how to manage our programs, and information based on the procedures that was taking place to fight the school integration in the court, and we were kept up with all the news about what action was being taken, what was the progress, and what was going to be done next. And so then we come to be connected with the leadership conference, the state council branches, I meant to say, and the Southwest regional activities. And by visiting these meetings. We were informed of all of the procedures. We were given instruction and advice on how to go about to fight against these problems that was affecting the community. First, the school situation. Second, registration and voting. And we began to go back to our various communities and putting this instruction and advice into action. By so doing, we were successful to solve many of our problems and solve many of our difficulties that we have in getting the job done based on registration and voting and what have you. The NAACP has played a very important part in helping us to get school integration, to get the rights to register and vote, and to get any problem we have developing in the voting procedures settled. And in connection with the NAACP, CORE has played a very important part in helping us to get the job done, because the NAACP stayed so far from us. It stayed far from us through by national official-wise and state official-wise. It stayed a very good distance. So it only had to do with the local officials or parish officials who were connected with the NAACP, who their information was very limited. Mm-hmm. However, this necessitated the core activities to join in, and it played a very important part in helping to keep us abreast on what changes should be made in helping to advance our program and helping to develop our program, or we can have a more effective program. And through this coordinated effort, we have been able to get the health unit challenged. We have been able to get the courthouse facilities challenged. We have been able to get their malt shops and what have we to service in this community, in our little town, challenged. We have been able to get school sites challenged. We have been able to get the recreation centers challenged. We have been able to get many things done through by the coordinated efforts of CORE and NAACP than we could have gotten done, I think, through the single organization, by the national officials being so far from the local officials. Mm-hmm. And this necessitated coordinated efforts of the NAACP and CORE in order to be able to get the job done.
Uh-huh. Now, back in the beginning of the days of the NAACP, you had some trouble, didn't you? And the chapter nearly dissolved.
Well, it was. We had trouble, and we had trouble. And the Attorney General felt that this was going to help to increase the Negro voters to the extent that they might become balance of power. And to fight this issue, he filed a charge against individuals. And these individuals played a very important part in the leadership of the NAACP and in the Masonic organization. And so what happened here was the Grand Master was charged, and the NAACP, the Louisiana, the State Council, the NAACP that represented the Louisiana State Council branches, he was charged, and the president of the LEA was charged, which represented the Louisiana Education Association was charged. And these charges, this man was under the impression that if he would stop these individuals, this would have a destiny to stop the NAACP activities. But it was not so, and that was clearly pointed out by the judge, the supreme judge of the state supreme judge, that to stop these individuals wouldn't mean that it would block the operation of NAACP. It has nothing to do with stopping an organized group. You can stop the individual and still the organization can still function. So then they dropped this charge and placed the charge against the organization. And this served the purpose of getting a ban against the organization, the operation of the organization. So what we had to do then to fight this issue, we had to break this ban by violation in order to get this case into the federal courts through their state Supreme Court into the federal courts, where we would be able to get a fair decision. In that, we had held a conference in New Orleans, a state conference, and it was recommended that we hold the next conference in Shreveport. So the day was set for the conference, and met over in Shreveport for the conference. When the decision was rendered that which made it permissible to operate the NAACP organization, providing they file a membership list with the Secretary of State. And this means that the membership list could identify any state-employed person or any parish-employed person, which, if this identity is discovered, then harassment could take place on the part of that individual, and they could either fire him or tantalize him otherwise, see. And with this in mind, we felt that it was very important to take under consideration the fact that we should violate this decision so that we could be able to get a charge against us, and we can go in the courts and defend ourselves and get this case appealed to the federal court, United States Supreme Court, and get some decision where we could be able to get a fair decision. And we met over there, and the state attorney general Grimion, enjoined the branch, the association from operating that, from being into action that day. So I had to cease to have a meeting that day and go back into court. In a process of time, the Supreme Court eventually rendered a decision stating that the action of the state on the part of banning the NAACP was null and void, unconstitutional. And the NAACP was a clean organization, and that it meant right, and it stood up for right principle, and it had a right because it was defending people instead of destroying them, and it was defending them. And it had a right to operate, and it was in accord. And it had the approval of the United States Supreme Court, and it was appealed by the Attorney General of the state. But I think the decision was rendered before he got up and stated his appeal against the operation of the NAACP.
Was there also a law passed that school teachers couldn't be members of the NAACP?
Yes, ma'am. It was a law enacted by the state legislation that any school teacher or bus driver be found contributing to the NAACP or an organization that contributes to the NAACP shall be fired.
And that discouraged the teachers joining the NAACP.
That's right. That discouraged the teachers and discouraged the bus drivers. And this law was repealed. It was appealed, and it was struck down by the federal courts.
Uh-huh.
But still, it left the teachers there kind of a little reluctant to cooperate.
Yeah.
Also the bus drivers, which in the first place, they were the chief engineers of the
uh-huh.
program. And we had teaching secretaries, and they'd done the secretary work, and they'd done the planning. They are done the advising, and they done the activity work, and they carried out the programs and everything. They done mm-hmm. made the announcements and everything. But when this ban come on, then they went into exile, and they
mm-hmm.
did not come out and participate openly.
Mm-hmm. You were telling me before about a leadership conference that was held at Southern University in Baton Rouge. Was that when you first started to organize the NAACP?
Well, a leadership conference, it started after the NAACP, shortly after the NAACP was organized. I think the sponsors of the leadership conference felt that even though the sponsors of the leadership conference were Mr. J.K. Haynes and
of the Louisiana
Education Association and the Grand Master John G. Lewis, he's the Grand Master of the Masonic Organization, and also others who participate in taking a part in working up this type of program so that local grassroots leaders could be informed. Now that we've lost the teachers, and we felt that it was necessary to train these persons who were not in the teaching profession so that we wouldn't lose a point and wouldn't lose ground in the march to first class citizenship. And so they held that was very important and necessary to set up what we call a leadership conference. And in this leadership conference, they were trained, they were taught the legal aspects of these things, such as schools and community-wise, and many other things. And many other things respecting the local problems that could develop in the, how to solve local problems that could develop in the community, and how to go about to be well informed on what to do and how to do it. It was recommended that we write over to the Secretary of State and get pamphlets on the Constitution and study these pamphlets, study this constitutional principle so that we can be legally informed of what action to take so we'll know when we're being treated unfair and what to do about it. So we'll put these this advice and instruction into action, and we have been able to be very successful by so doing.
Okay, thank you very much. I just want to add that further information about voting in St. Helena Parish can be found in the hearings before the United States Commission on Civil Rights held in New Orleans, Louisiana, September 27th and 28th, 1960, and May 5th and 6th, 1961, and Mr. Howard was one of the witnesses who testified before the